Barbara Olenek Morrow is a journalist and author who's been a Pulitzer Prize finalist for editorial writing. Her latest book is a biography of Hoosier author Gene Stratton Porter. Nick Schinkel, director of the West Lafayette Public Library, has the review and begins by reading from the book.
In March 1872, when Gene Stratton Porter was 8 years old, President Ulysses S. Grant signed a bill creating America's first national park, Yellowstone. In setting aside that stretch of western wilderness, Congress acted to ensure that everyone, not just a privileged few, could enjoy Yellowstone's natural wonders. Growing up on a farm near Wabash, Indiana, Stratton Porter lived half a continent away from Yellowstone. But even as a young girl, she grasped the importance of protecting and preserving wildlife and wild places. Her tools were her pen and her camera. Over the course of a quarter century, Stratton Porter wrote 26 books, novels, nonfiction, a collection of essays, children's books, and poetry, all layered and woven with nature lore. Many of the books, as well as the numerous articles she wrote for popular magazines, were lavishly illustrated with photographs she took while exploring the outdoors. Her appeal was enormous, and her following vast. Her fiction and nonfiction sold for many years at a rate of nearly 1,700 copies a day. So opens Nature's Storyteller, The Life of Gene Stratton Porter, a Hoosier through and through. A woman who had an independence about her that would see her through tragedy and through scorn. She had natural talents and intelligence that brought her one of the largest reading audiences of the 20th century. And she was, through and through, a Hoosier legend that we celebrate even today. As our author relates, Gene Stratton Porter had an almost idyllic childhood. She loved the family farm. It sat on 240 acres of rolling land crossed by three streams. The white two-story farmhouse was a picture of order and tidiness. A white picket fence ran across the front yard. Nearby was a red barn with a big yard for animals, smaller houses for chickens and ducks, a vegetable garden, and an orchard fragrant with the blossoms of apple, peach, and pear trees. The property went by the name Hopewell Farm. As Gene wrote years later, quote, "No other farm was quite so lovely." Guided by her curiosity, Gene roamed at will outdoors. As long as she showed up promptly at mealtimes, her family asked few questions. Quote, "By the day," Gene recalled, "I trotted from one object which attracted me to another, singing a little song of made-up phrases about everything I saw, while I waited catching fish, chasing butterflies over clover fields, or following a bird with hair in its beak." On her wandering, she followed her father's example of respecting wildlife. Before long, she was befriending wild creatures, too. She made pets of baby squirrels and rabbits, fed sweetened water to butterflies, and nursed wounded animals back to health. Though this wonderful childhood, this wonderful natural childhood, would end tragically with the death of Gene's mother and the family's subsequent move into town, those early years had brought out the lover of nature in Gene, and she would not forget those experiences, nor would she forget the joy she found in them. City life was not for Gene Stratton. And let's remember that city life, for her, was living in the town of Wabash. Hardly the stuff of Indianapolis, Fort Wayne, or Chicago. But still, her rupture from easy access to the world of nature, and perhaps as bad, her incarceration, as she probably saw it, in the town's schools, as our author writes, Gene hated that she had to sit indoors when scented woods and berry patches and clover fields beckoned. She also hated wearing uncomfortable clothes, long stockings, and heavy shoes. Saturday evenings were bad enough. That's when Gene's heavy brown hair that hung in braids had to be washed and curled for the next day's church services. Now school meant similar torture in terms of dress and being cooped up. It was her independent spirit, honed as it was in those first years of her life, that once again saw her through these travails. For by the senior year in high school, no small feat for a woman in the late 19th century to achieve, let's note, Gene finally burst her bonds of social captivity and declared her formal schooling years were over. She abruptly quit high school months before graduation and turned her intelligence and her talents to what she, Gene Stratton, wanted to do, and that was to deepen her study of the natural world. And so young Jean Stratton strikes out into the late 19th century enthusiastically studying on her own, and soon enough, joining the burgeoning middle-class life of small-town Indiana by marrying Dr. Porter, a man of means who funded the construction of Jean Stratton Porter's first cabin in the woods. Early in their marriage, realizing that the life of a middle-class wife was not her highest calling in life, Jean took up her pen during the mornings and put on her hiking boots in the afternoon, carving out a career as a nature writer, a career that gained momentum even as the Victorian age gave way to the new 20th century. We often read and write that, quote, only this generation could discover this or that characteristic, unquote, or that history and biography is written differently by its generation based on its interests, its prejudices about life. So I think it is quite fair to state that this book, that this look at Jean Stratton Porter could only have been written and published in the time in which we live. Surely previous generations knew about Jean Stratton Porter's unconventional life and her unconventional take on science, but I think only this generation would be interested in pursuing the depths of Jean Stratton Porter's commitment to her inner muse at the expense of the very conventional Victorian lifestyle she was expected to live in her time. Jean Stratton Porter popularized what was then considered to be unconventional photography. Instead of photographing dead and stuffed birds or moths or whatever the subject might be, she must have the moths and the birds and the other creatures she photographs as living creatures. And she went to great lengths to photograph her subjects in just this way. Her household was unconventional, but so very in keeping with Stratton Porter's facility in bringing the natural world into the home. We learned that in the Stratton Porter home, moths and butterflies and the cocoons from which they emerged festooned her homes with their wild beauty as they flew around the conservatory. Wild birds were welcome to fly in and out of the open windows whenever the weather allowed. And, of course, the many wounded or orphaned wildlife creatures that Jean nursed back to health were to be stumbled over as they filled the floor's corners and shelves, helping to form this very nature-centered home. Her marriage to Dr. Porter was loving, but unconventional, and her publishing agreement with the Doubleday Publishing Company, which was to publish one nonfiction, her favorite type of writing, and one fiction, her publisher's favorite form of her writing, on alternating years, was certainly unconventional. And her science. Our biographer stresses that Jean Stratton Porter read widely and deeply of the naturalists who were publishing in her day, yet critics regularly savaged her work as dull, pedestrian, and not worth publishing. Her readers, it would seem, chose to disagree, for while her nonfiction books were never as popular sellers as her fiction books, still they did quite well and enabled her to share her love for the natural world and spread far and wide her message of the need for conservation in the midst of the burgeoning extraction of America's natural bounty. Many compare her in this way to her fellow conservationist Teddy Roosevelt, for both were under no illusions as to the need for economic growth, but argued strongly for a respect for the natural world, for conserving the wild as well. Her lovingly taken photographs of butterflies and birds grace this book. Stratton Porter became an expert photographer among her many other achievements, and as noted before, these photographs feature living creatures in their natural world. It is striking to me that the moths that are at rest or flying, the birds singing, nesting, mating, and even the wildflowers and plants that are featured in Nature Storyteller are so real-looking to us today just because they were real, living creatures when Stratton Porter captured their image on film 100 years ago. The author of so many popular books of nature in her own day, books which include Freckles, The Girl of the Limberlost, The Harvester, Laddie, and nonfiction books such as Birds of the Bible, Moths of the Limberlost, and Homing with the Birds, Jean Stratton Porter is still popular with many readers today. I had the pleasure of listening to the author of today's book present this life and times of Jean Stratton Porter at a recent library conference held in Kokomo, and delighted not only in the author's presentation, but in learning so much more that I didn't know about Gene Stratton Porter thanks to this new book. As I noted earlier, critics were legion during Gene Stratton Porter's life, as they are now, and they were harsh when it came to Stratton Porter's fiction and nonfiction. Yet, it never brought her down. It never caused her to lose sight of her strong feelings of conservation and her strong appeal to her readers. As Gene Stratton Porter wrote in responding to critics of one of her best-selling works of fiction, Laddie, A True Blue Story, published in the summer of 1913, quote, "I could write no truer biography. To the contour of hill and field, to the last stripe on the wallpaper and not on the door, that is the home in which I was born." End quote. For critics, the novel's sentimentality and lecturing tone again proved to be too much. Quote, "There's a great deal of preaching. Virtue is rewarded right and left," end quote, complained the New York Times reviewer. A British reviewer bristled that Laddie and his family were all human perfection, which is why we should find them intolerably wearisome. By then, Stratton Porter also was bristling, thoroughly frustrated with those who found her fiction too sweet. To her detractors, she replied, quote, "Today, criticism of Laddie by a minister of the gospel was sent me, in which he wrote of it as molasses fiction. What a wonderful compliment. All the world loves sweets. Molasses is more necessary to the happiness of human and beast than vinegar, and overindulgence not nearly so harmful to the system. I am a molasses person myself. So are most of my friends. All of them who are happy, as a matter of fact. So I shall keep straight on writing of the love and joy of life I have found in the world. God gave me a taste for sweets, and the sales of the books I write prove that a few other people are similar to me in this." It's a wonderful look at a Hoosier writer who is still read and celebrated today, and I think thanks to this marvelous biography, which, as I said, is full of her own nature photographs, will be treasured even more. It's Nature's Storyteller, The Life of Gene Stratton Porter by Hoosier writer Barbara Olenek Morrow. It's available at many of our fine local libraries, including, of course, the West Lafayette Public Library.
That was Nick Schinkel, the director of the West Lafayette Public Library. He's reviewed Nature's Storyteller, The Life of Gene Stratton Porter. It's the seventh volume in the Indiana Historical Society Press Youth Biography Series, and it's written by Barbara Olenek Morrow.